Right now, it is time to bring in Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. You'll find Arthur, of course, live every Monday morning at this time here on Robin Hood Radio. We broadcast on the weekend and also during our noontime hour during the week. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is, Arthur Schwartz. Good morning, Arthur.
Yes, I'm here. Good morning, everybody. So, off air, I was saying to Jill, I'm concerned about 5% at minimum tariff on Mexican products.
Oh, yeah, and that's just the first month.
She tells me I shouldn't even think about it because it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
But let me just point out to people that if it does happen, that's the first place you're going to notice it. Is I buy a lot of Mexican produce, I realize. And in fact, when it comes to the boxed cherry and grape, and I'm looking at a box here to see what they're calling these. They call these grape tomatoes. These boxed tomatoes come either from Mexico or Canada. Now, if you had a choice between Mexico, Mexican tomatoes, and Canadian tomatoes, very rarely, by the way, do I see them produced in the USA. But, you know, we must grow plenty of them, too. But still, I mainly see Canadian and Mexican. I buy the Mexican. I buy Mexican red peppers. Actually, when I heard about the tariffs, the first thing I thought of is that these wonderful $2 Mexican peppers that I've been buying could go up to $3. Now, you know, affluent people, I understand, don't even look at prices in the supermarket. But I always felt it was my job to know these things. And now that I'm on what they used to call, and probably people still do, a fixed income, I'm very aware of prices. I may, you know, decide I'm going to spend that silly amount of money. But, you know, I do usually look at prices. And, in fact, here's a little warning for you, everybody. I have realized lately, more than in the past, when I go to the supermarket checkout counter, now that everything is computerized, that very often the price that's in the computer and that they're charging you is not the price that's on the shelf. Or, for instance, the other day, I noticed that this packaged meat that I've been talking about, Thomas Farms,
yep.
that it was on sale for $4.99. So I said, oh, I'll buy two of those. And I'll figure out what to do with it when I get home. That's such a good price for this very good lamb. Anyway, I get to the checkout counter, and they're charging me $6.99, which is the regular price. I said, no. But so you have to watch. At that one checkout, I caught $3 that they were going to charge me that they shouldn't have been charging me. Because, as I said, the price in the this is not the checkout. The checkout person's responsibility. It's somebody in the store who's not keeping the. And by the way, this is not just in one store. This I notice is prevalent in many stores now, including Whole Foods, where if they do have the wrong price in the machine, you have to go wait on a line at the service counter to get it fixed. I mean, it's crazy. That is a bad service. In Whole Foods, where they normally have very good service. So that said, I'm very price conscious, and this 5% tariff, which could in a few months go up to 25% if Donald Trump keeps his word, which he doesn't usually. So that's why Jill said, "Don't worry so much; it's not going to happen." But you should be aware that all those things are going to go up in price. That'll push people into being locavore, right?
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah, exactly. You only eat what comes from a few miles away. And you don't worry about Canadian and Mexican tomatoes. So all that said, today is National Egg Day. Now, you grew up on an egg farm, didn't you?
A chicken farm, but yeah.
You had eggs.
Absolutely. We had eggs and chicken out the yin-yang.
Yeah. So I'm wondering, is June, early June, maybe the peak of laying time traditionally?
I have no idea. I may have lived on that. I may have lived on
that. Your form of rebellion was not to pay attention.
That's right.
That's with me in cars. My father was an auto mechanic. My rebellion was I had no interest in cars. So, and still don't, really. Anyway, eggs in this house are a real staple. We eat eggs for dinner, not for breakfast. And it's a great source of protein. So when I have nothing else in the house in the way of protein, I often make eggs, and a lot of different ways with eggs. Of course, frittatas, because you look in the pantry and in your refrigerator, and even if you only have an onion, you can make a great frittata. A frittata is not an omelet, because an omelet, French-style omelet, is a totally different thing. I don't know. So I think everybody these days knows what a frittata is, but certainly when I started my career in food journalism, I always had to explain it. But the thing about frittatas is they're tricky if you do them the traditional way, which is to turn them out onto a plate and then flip it over and back into the pan. So I've succumbed to the lazy way, which is, and by the way, if you're making a small frittata, meaning like 8 inches, that's not a big deal. And I've discovered that if you use a pot cover instead of a plate, a pot cover that has a handle instead of a plate, it makes the whole process much easier and you're less likely to drop it on the floor. So, but the lazy way is to, after you've set the bottom of the frittata, to put it in under the broiler or into the oven. I actually prefer the broiler method, and it goes very, very fast, so you have to keep peeking in the oven and looking at it. But I was mentioning this to my cousin Erica, who's a food writer. She said, "Oh, I don't want to put my pan in the, I know, because I say I always use I don't know what they did in the old days. It was made more difficult. You have to use a nonstick pan. It's the only thing I use. Well, I shouldn't say that. I have some really good and, by the way, cheap nonstick pans that I use, and I use them for a lot of things.
But you can't put them under the broiler.
Pardon me?
Do you put them under the, I mean...
So the thing is this, that all nonstick pans, it seems, I was not aware of this until Erica said it, come with handles that cannot be put on the broiler.
That melt, exactly.
So I said, but you know, you can, and I do it all the time, I did it just the other day. I made a ham and asparagus frittata. It was delicious. Anyway, there's a long handle. You don't have to put the handle underneath the broiler. You just put the surface of the frittata under the broiler, and these silicone handles are usually good to 500 degrees. So unless you've preheated the oven to 500 before you put the frittata in, you have no risk of burning your handle. So, and then again, as I said, under the broiler, the top sets pretty fast.
What?
So you can... you just keep peeking in the oven. It never gets all that hot, but you get a nice surface. And then, by the way, I you know, when I do it in this method, you have to make sure that it's set all the way through. Push your finger into the middle. Don't push, but you know, touch the middle and make sure that it feels firm. And, in fact, it will continue to cook, especially if you've done it the lazy oven method. And so... you take it out of the oven and put a cover over it, or just leave it in the turned-off oven for a little bit, and it'll, as it cools down a little bit, it'll set. But anyway, that's only one of a zillion ways I use eggs, but here's a real go-to egg dish. Once written about in the New York Times, inspired by me, but I think now it's been disseminated so much that nobody relates it to me, but it was something I did 30 years ago, and I'm going to give myself some credit here. A Neapolitan mom, a friend of mine, does this all the time, and it's fried eggs with spaghetti.
Really?
Nothing could be simpler. You just fry up some eggs, bullseye style, and leave the yolks as runny as you can manage to leave them. And you do it in a little more olive oil than you normally would fry an egg in. If you want to do butter, you can do butter, but I always do olive oil. And if you want to put a piece of garlic in the oil before you start cooking the eggs, that's okay, but it doesn't need it. And as soon as the eggs are done, whites are set, yolks are not quite, you toss that over cooked spaghetti, hot spaghetti, and toss it all up together, and you could add cheese. It's really good with cheese. I like it with a lot of pepper. And I use Parmigiano because that's what I standard have in the house, but certainly a pecorino, you know, locatelli, whatever, you know, which one you want is going to be delicious too. And that's like sublime eggs, I think. And add to that, you know, this is a recipe that was in my first Neapolitan cookbook, Naples at Table, and is now become a Schwartz family standard, because both my niece and my nephew make it. It's called Spaghetti di Ettore, which is named for my friend Cecilia's son, Ettore. Ettore, who is, I think, a few days ago turned 50, so no kid anymore. But when he was a kid, this was his favorite dish that his mother made. So it became Spaghetti di Ettore, and it's the what I just described, which is fried eggs on spaghetti, with the addition of strips of roasted red pepper, see, Mexico, and which I toss with olive oil, a little bit, don't need a whole lot, breadcrumbs, capers, olives. I don't put anchovies in it, but you could. And bake that in the, you know, heat. Basically, you can do that way ahead. And as you're making your spaghetti and your fried eggs, you reheat that in the oven, 400-degree oven, while you're cooking the rest of it. And it'll be nice and hot when you toss that in with the eggs. It's a very elaborate dish, actually. But it can all be done ahead except for the spaghetti and the eggs, which is one of my emergency meals.
What if it's
a rare occurrence when I don't have eggs and pasta in the house.
Right. I had one of those moments. I had eggs and pasta, but I had one of those Arthur Schwartz what to cook when there's nothing in the house because what you were counting on turned out to not be to be rotten.
No. That happens.
That was last night, but I just with your spaghetti and fried eggs, what if you add this is going to fatten it up a little bit, but what if you added a clump, make a version of carbonara, add a clump of lardon and, you know, some cracked
clump.
Pepper. Yeah, you know, make some lardon.
Yeah, bacon and eggs.
Right, exactly, on pasta. But
you could garnish it with crisp bacon, that would be, or pancetta, that would be delicious.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
that's
you can leave the fat in the pan, I think, in that case.
Yeah,
maybe just a little bit, you know, but I must say I like the taste of olive oil. So
no, it would be an olive oil. I wouldn't. That's how I would make it different from carbonara, actually. I would leave it the olive oil, but I would throw on either a handful of pancetta or lardon into this mixture.
Bacon.
All right.
So I'll tell you what, it is a very good addition to you see, I always think I need to eat a vegetable. In fact, I'm having a procedure later in the summer, and the doctor told me I can't eat. Well, let me just say what I can eat. For 4 days, I can only eat protein and fat. No vegetables, no fruit, nothing with fiber. So I'm really going to miss that. 4 days without vegetables to me is an eternity. So I often like say I have to have a vegetable, and there are a lot of vegetables that I would add to my fried eggs with spaghetti. For instance, asparagus. I would I cut the I've done this on the air a few times already. I cut the asparagus on a sharp diagonal after they're washed, and the bottoms are broken off. and I saute them over medium-high heat with either olive oil or butter, depending on what else I'm doing with them. By the way, or it could be vegetable oil, because I've thrown those into a fried rice, delicious fried rice with asparagus. So I would do that ahead, and then after frying my eggs, I'd toss that in. You know, toss that in with the eggs. That's delicious.
Yeah, that sounds delicious.
You could even do something like baby arugula. I don't even know what they're calling it these days. In Italian, it's rocchetta. You know, it's the small arugula.
Baby arugula.
I never even see the big arugula anymore.
Do you know that in UK it's called rocket? So, you know.
Rocket. In English, it's rocket. Yes.
Right.
In American English, it's also rocket.
Go to
a seed catalog, you'll find it under rocket.
So get baby, you know, so you, what you're looking
yeah,
for.
Yeah, the
is
rocket. You can either chop it up a little bit or not. I don't mind it not with spaghetti, long pieces. It'll wilt as soon as you put it in with the hot pasta. By the way, forget the eggs. That's a delicious, a simple pasta. Just
olive oil
rocket. Yeah, olive oil. By the way, I would raw olive oil. Don't have to cook anything.
Right.
I mean, this is great in the middle of the summer.
Yep.
The only thing you have to do is boil the pasta. The only reason to turn the flame on the stove. Otherwise, you just put oil. And I like raw garlic. And you don't have to use a lot, Jill. You could just use a little bit. Gives it a little zest.
Or if you don't, you could throw in some capers.
Yeah, capers are always good. That's something I don't have to go out and buy ever until I run out. But I buy. I never allow myself to run out of capers. So I mean, when it gets down to the bottom of the jar that I have on the shelf here, salted capers, they don't need to be refrigerated. When I see it gets down to, you know, a half an inch in the jar, I next time I'm in the market, I buy more. So there, I always have salted capers, and they don't have to be that salty. By the way, you can soak salted capers in cold water. Usually 15 minutes will reduce the salt significantly. Rinse them first, and then salt significantly. And if you want them even less salty, you just keep them in the water. I must say that a desalted caper is a very special thing, because it really has, they're good capers, and when you buy capers under salt, mostly they're high quality to start. By the way, if you see a water liquid at the bottom of the jar, because they do sell these in the supermarket as well, I'm pretty sure Goya has them and some other companies carry them. But if there's liquid at the bottom of the jar, don't buy them. That means they weren't processed well enough to be dry and keep. There was still moisture left in them before they put them in the jar. But mine are very dry, and you just have to soak them to remove the salt, and then you get this nice perfumey, because, you know, capers are flower buds, and you really can see that they're flower buds. A lot of people think there's some kind of seafood or fish, only because they go so well with seafood and fish. And I have a funny story about capers. I don't know how many years ago this was, at least 30, maybe probably more, because I was alone. It was BB, before Bob. And I was on Capri, and somebody told me, I don't know, probably a Neapolitan friend who just wanted to tease me, that they had the best capers on Capri. So the Capri di Capri. I loved saying it. So I go to Capri, and I'm asking everybody I meet, practically, do you know anybody who grows capers? And nobody knew what I was talking about. Until I go up to Anna Capri, and I'm negotiating to buy something. There's a market up there, like a tourist market up at the top of the hill, mountain. And I'm saying to him, I'm looking all over for Capri di Capri, and nobody knows anybody who grows. He said, well, I grow capers. And he took me home to see his garden, which was amazing. And it was overlooking the sea, which is supposedly the best place to grow capers, is near the sea. And I'm not talking just about salted capers, but also the ones that are put up in vinegar. The pickled capers, and he gave me a jar to take home. They were not salted capers. They were in sea salt. And it was sea salt, at least he told me. It was sea salt from the Blue Grotto, which was just below where he lived. So this was so romantic, right? Capers in sea salt from the Blue Grotto.
Sounds really...
It took me years to open up this jar because I just wanted to save it as a memory. And when I finally opened up the jar, it stunk to high heaven. It was like the worst sea smell you can imagine.
And you're like on the beach when it's just reeks.
And I flushed this like 1 liter jar of precious coppity de coppity down the toilet.
And you saved it forever. That I think cracks me up. You know, and I have stuff like that. That it's like, all right, this is so special. I found something like that this morning. It wasn't food related, but it's like, this is so special, made by the nuns in the monastery. It's totally encrusted,
my
and you'll never use
one
it.
Is my friend Marie Kalman, who lived in Captiva in Florida, had. Key limes growing in her backyard. And when she came back, she was my friend from West Cornwall, so some of you listening may have known Marie. Marie lived right at the edge of the village in West Cornwall. Anyway, Marie used to bring back lime. She would pre-squeeze the lime juice, grate the zest, and bring this back in packages. Each package for one pie. So there would be a packet of zest and a packet of juice, each to make one pie. Now, I had I froze the juice in ice cube trays, and I kept the packets of rind in the freezer, and Marie died, and I still had... and so for a couple of years, I really did not want to part with these ice cubes of lime juice, which Marie had squeezed herself. So it took years for me to decide to actually use them. And by that time, the rind, of course, was totally desiccated and unusable. But I think the juice was okay, if I remember.
Okay.
Anyway, memories.
It's, where would we be without them?
Yeah, and eggs. Where would we be?
Eggs and memory. No, absolutely. Do you ever
We all remember, speaking of memories and eggs, we all remember when everybody was egg phobic because they...
Oh,
had too much cholesterol or something?
Yeah, and I have to say that reliably, every, 12.5 years or give or take, you have eggs are bad, and then eggs are refurbished and rehabilitated. They come off, they come out of exile, haha.
Well,
and then,
now, certainly among the younger generation, eggs are... honored.
Not if you're vegan.
The hipster cuisine is whatever it is with a fried egg on top.
But isn't vegan non-egg?
I didn't say vegan. I just said hipster.
I understand. I was just
they're even
you
carnivorous
said,
hipsters.
That's true. You said there are truly and this doesn't I think get as much play as it should. There are truly carnivorous hipsters. I mean, truly madly, deeply. But I'm
barbecue. Let's that one word. Let's just remember, we never had any barbecue restaurants in the New York area. In fact, there was a time when you couldn't have a barbecue because you weren't allowed to smoke within the city limits, or not within Manhattan anyway, because there was at that time even a barbecue in Queens. But now there's barbecue practically on every corner.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. That's a big deal, that.
All right. Everybody have an eggy week.
The incredible edible egg.
The incredible edible egg.
I'm trying to whittle down my cookbook collection, and I have been, if anybody's interested, I've been selling a lot of my books to a bookstore here in Brooklyn called Lizzie Young Bookseller.
She loves you, right?
Very charming store. I mentioned this. But going through my books, I could not believe how many books on eggs I have. So I have to now look at the copyrights and see if they came out every 15 years because...
I would be just interested in the date span. You're right.
The 50s and then all the way up to the 90s. But maybe I stopped buying books in the early 2000s. But I'm sure there's more egg books out there than almost anything.
All right. I would be interested in your research, sir. Thank you.
Well, it'll only take 5 minutes. I'll call you later.
Okay, good.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
That is Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Of course, you can hear Arthur every Monday morning, roughly 7:35 to 8 o'clock here on WHDD and the Robin Hood Radio Network. All the time at robinhoodradio.com. Click on On Demand. Click on Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467, and on the web, jarestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Grocers on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, rubiners.com. Hillsdale Home Chef with two beautiful teaching classes, and they've got classes to go in those cooking rooms. More information, 518-325-7000, hghshomechef.com. And Haven Cafe in Lenox, Massachusetts, offering quality food and excellent service. Also, they feature catering. Supporting local organic farmers, environmentally conscious, and epicurious distributors, havencafebakery.com.